Today is Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. This is part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Alice Talakte. And Alice spells her last name T-A-L-A-K-T-E. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Alice. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much for letting us do this oral history, Alice. May we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. Alice, after the last interview, you and I were talking, and you mentioned some other things that you would like to talk about, and so I take it away.
Yeah, I'm trying to straighten that here. Okay. What was the question? I'm sorry.
You had mentioned some accidents last time we talked, and I wondered if you would talk about those.
Well, lately I was thinking about it since this interview came out. You know, accidents seem to follow me all my life. My worst accident that I know, which I don't remember anything at all, was about 3 months, and 3 months old. I guess my family took their boat down to Cedar Ridge, and they were using the sheep dipping to make them well and stuff like that. They usually did it in the summertime. That was done by the PIA. So my family went there and a bunch of them apparently. So we have a wagon. My father has a wagon, and the horses were not used to anything as busy as the place was on that day. I'm sorry. But anyways, and I guess after that, we left going home, and there was a dirt road for horse travel, and kind of like a wagon track. And the Highway 89 was completed by then, so there were vehicles on the highway.
Okay.
Kind of some distance away from it. But the horses were kind of spooky because I guess before they came down what is now going up from... there used to be a road down from 2 Cedar Ridge.
Okay.
And used that, so the horses were not used. I mean, didn't mind that at all. But coming back, somehow they stopped for a little bit, but the horse got spooked by the sound of a vehicle, maybe a truck or something, I don't know. And they took off and tried to turn, but the lot that comes, that they watch the horse, they were pulling the wagon.
Yeah.
Well, it turned, and I guess that projected the wagon to turn over. But the only thing that stopped, and I don't know if the horse got loose or what. I may have been told, but I don't remember. But anyway, so the wagon turned over, and there were three of us small kids. It would be my cousin, who's about few months older than myself, and then my sister, who's about 2-3 years older than myself, and I was 3 months old, like I said, and we fell out. And apparently the two other, my cousin and my sister, landed in a softer spot, but I was in a cradle boot, and our cradle boot is like two boards that are put together, and then they has a board that's usually known as a head boot.
Okay.
And I guess I fell into the rougher area, but the head boot saved me and didn't get, I don't know what happened, but anyway, so that's what saved me. Otherwise, there would have been no, I wouldn't have been around.
Wow. And your poor parents, they must have been terrified.
They probably were, because I think everybody was screaming. I don't know how many people were in the wagon, because I think my sisters and then my my cousin's parents and her my cousin, but that would be my uncle, my mother's brother's, my mother's brother, the little girl. But anyway, some visitor passing by on the road, on the highway, saw it, and they came over, and apparently, I don't know if I was conscious or not, I'm not sure, because that would be a pretty big bump falling from a wagon. And they took my mother and me to the hospital in Tupa. And since I was still nursing, my mother stayed with me. Apparently, my mother was not in the wagon, so most of all adults, they may have been taking a break or
okay.
something. I don't know. But anyway, so I stayed in the hospital, and I have that record when it happened. So that was one of them. And then, of course, after that, it was like falling off horses, and that was always pretty much on every other day or so, because our horses were only used to men. My older brother and my uncle, my uncles and my cousin would take care of them. And, of course, my sister did not. And we have a donkey, and that was what they used. Root sheep and stuff like that. So it wasn't until I came along that I started messing around with horses. And I think I fell more times than I can remember at all. But anyway, so that's in my younger days.
Alice, I wanted to ask you a little more about the wagon. This would have been in 1940?
1941.
And this would have been a time when automobiles and horse carriage, horses with wagons, especially in the southwestern United States, were still sharing the road.
Yeah. Well, what it is my dad was working. He had a vehicle, but I don't think he was home. And so because he either followed jobs in California or some Utah, somewhere else, and I think it may have been just my, that is why my uncle might have been with them.
Okay.
But anyway, because all of those stuff that you put on horses are pretty heavy, so my uncle usually comes to help his sister. So I don't remember if I'd been told that my dad was not there, but he used to be gone pretty much in the summertime to other jobs. Other than that, when he comes home, he was worked with the Navajo PD.
Okay.
At that time, they also used horses for different incidents around near Tuba City area or up in our area, because it's what about, I don't know how many miles it is. I haven't been on that dirt route from where we used to live to Tupa. It's not that far, they tell me. Because my dad used to ride to Tupa City on a horseback. So, but anyway, so that is, we had vehicles, but he was working somewhere, I guess. So that's a bit right there.
Do you remember any other stories of wagons having trouble with vehicles at all? Different families or different people you knew?
No, other than just sometimes if the horse is being trained, that'd be some other friend, they're training them to pull the wagon, and sometimes the Navajo horses at that time were kind of like not used to these things. They're frightened of anything bigger than themselves.
Okay.
And, so there are some stories, but I don't remember any story that was very serious. But then, later on, maybe when I was about 10 or 11, we still had the wagon. So they were training two horses my brother was training two horses to pull the wagon. So one day, my older sister decided, we're going to get some water, so she hook up the put the horses before the wagon and did all the things that she had to do. So we got in the wagon, and no, I didn't get in the wagon yet. She hadn't got it. So she started out. She said, let me sort them out. So they go. And then immediately, apparently, there's a signal that they recognize that they can either slow down or walk or take off. So apparently my sister did something that the horse said, okay, we got to go.
Wow.
And took off. And she was going around in a circle. It was so funny because she hadn't been to control. It was kind of funny but scary at the same time.
I bet.
But then there was a gear that you can pull, and she finally caught that, and that helped slow the horses down. We thought it was funny, so we were all laughing about it. But then she learned how to, my brother told her, this is what you do to the team. Horses, if you want to move or to walk or, you know, to kind of like just go slowly or to do a little bit faster. So that was the fun part, but nothing happened. So we never did tell our parents, though, because we didn't want to get my sister in trouble.
No, it sounds like there was a learning curve to learn how to drive a wagon.
Yeah, he was quite a bit, and I never did. And I never did driving the wagon, but I did ride horses and messing around with horses around about that time.
And you had mentioned one really bad accident when you had fallen off a horse, but it sounds like you fell off quite a lot.
I fell off quite a lot. And this horse, you know, it was just not, you know, not even, I was with my little sister. She was probably about 4 years old. Because usually we let them out at night so they can graze. We huddle them and they go out and feed. So I usually go after the horses, and my sister wanted to follow me, so we walked and found the horses, and I put her on the smaller horse, and I was riding the bigger horse. And we weren't even running or anything. It's just that she, I guess I moved into looking holes, and a foot got caught, and somehow she tried to get back up, and somehow I fell in front of her. It was a mare, and I fell in front of her, and coming back down, she fell on me. And then I remember waking up and looking her right eye to eye because her face was right next to me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I tried to get up, but I couldn't, so I just laid there. And then I began to get a sense of, like, my back is hurting. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of, like, to the side, and I was laying in cactus.
Oy.
And my sister stopped and was just looking at me. Of course, she was too small. I didn't want her to get down. So I told her, just go home. And just go home. And then so she started going home. And I happened to be holding on to the horses. I didn't have the bridle. I just had the rope and then had it around her nose. And so I was holding it, and but on top of that, I was laying on it, too, so she couldn't take off.
Mm.
And I don't know, I think I kind of passed out because when I woke up, I was like, it was warm. So I don't know how long I was out. So I finally got up, and I said, oh, this is fun, because I found that I was, and a cactus, one of these smaller cactus, probably spread out. So finally I went, and I got home, and usually I go to my grandmother first instead of my mother.
Okay.
Now, what did you do? How did you send me yesterday? You say, I know names. What happened to you? And what did you do? That sort of thing. He said about my grandmother never questioned that. She said, come on, and took your clothes off. And so she took all my needles out, the spines out. And then she usually will heat up some kind of oats. Sometimes she would just use juniper.
Okay.
She had to grind the juniper or get fresh ones right away and then warm it up. And she would wash you with that. And, oh, that was so good. So I was sick. And I think I really fell. And I just was, I didn't have, I was weak and I was kind of like, I just want to sleep all the time. And then that was a time that I was going back to, I was in Indian school in Oregon, at Chemawa, Oregon. So that followed me. This happened maybe a month before I went back to school. And I went back to school and they examined me there because I was just so tired all the time. And then they told me that I may have had some kind of an illness, and they thought it might be tuberculosis, so I was sent to Tacoma, Washington, to the sanitarium there. And I was treated for that. And I was there for almost a year before I came back to school. And I didn't come home that year because I was in the hospital. And then I finally got released and went back to school. And I was still getting medication for what was sort of, they told me that I had tuberculosis. And then the next summer I came home and went to Tuba City because I was, not that I was sick, I just went there to find and see if I had it.
Okay.
And they examined me and they said, and I was told, no, you didn't have that. Now, at that time, I don't know if they still give me a treatment for tuberculosis, which I really didn't understand a lot at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But you get medication and you get shot on the butt every morning. And then if you sit down, you bleed after a while. But anyway, so they told me that my lung was damage.
Ah.
And that's what it was, because somehow that I my lung almost got and they told me that it could have, I could have a big scar or a big a break. And anyway, so I didn't have that. And I was on another medication for a while, and then I got better. And then I went back to messing around with horses as usual.
Okay.
Then more falls. Other than that, I was very careful. And if I was to fall, If my horse kind of like, because anyway, I kind of like took more precaution than I did before. So that's the story of a lot of my horses. And then before that, when we were herding sheep, we had some big sheep, and my sister and I would get a big one and put a load on him, and then close his eyes, put our hands over his eyes, and then we get on him. But they know which way the sheep, but the herd went, so they would take up with us in the first week, and not falling before, not too long of a trip, because they're really bouncy.
Huh.
And the sheep were running. So that was our sort of like our game. Yeah, we had one big sheep that we used to trick him into coming to to us because he'll get some grass or some flats or something that he likes, and he will come over and that's when we will get on, hold him.
How old were you when you were doing that?
Huh?
How old were you?
I was, we started this way back before when we were herding sheep, so I would say probably about 10, and my sister's about 3 years older than myself.
Okay.
So we've done that. That was fun. Until I decided, okay, that is not, I'm probably too heavy for the sheep.
Yeah.
Which I probably wasn't, because when I was in school, I weighed about something like 85 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. That's a lot for a sheep, though.
Pardon me?
That's a lot of weight for a sheep.
Yeah, that's a lot of weight for the sheep. But the sheep itself probably weighed around about maybe, a big one would weigh 100 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah. And because they shear, my family shear in the spring, so in the summertime, and then from the wool is coming back up, and then that way we can grab the wool, the sheep's wool, so we hang out. But when they're small, you can't have from the wool, or after they've been sheared, we couldn't do that.
So, did you shear your own sheep? I mean,
yes.
not shear them, but did you card the wood? Did you clean the wool out and then spin it up?
Yeah, after the shearing, clean the wool, shake up all the dirt. Some sheep will have a lot of dirt in it because I didn't know if they'd have a sheep. Other will be just clean all over, and they have to clean it up and then bag it into a big wool sack, and my family got some made. At that time, the wool was more, I don't know, back in the 60s, the 50s and 60s, $2 a pound is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and $2 or whatever it was. And then we have goats, too, so they have longer hair and much finer.
Okay.
They're usually pretty clean because goats, for some reason or another, you know, some people say that goats are dumb. You know what? No, they're not.
Hmm.
Because they will be ahead of the herd because they don't want to mess around with the food that the sheep have eaten.
Oh, interesting.
They want to find cleaner ones. So, and they climb trees, too.
Yes.
So that was kind of funny. So we had both sheep and goats. And my grandmother had a donkey, and she had a horse, a mare. And this is not the mare that I fell off, but another one that was my grandma. And only my grandmother could saddle that horse, because otherwise the horse would stand there and she. Anybody other than my grandmother coming, she'll be standing there with her ears pulled. She'll push her ears back, saying, "Don't come near me. Don't try. I fight." So we let my grandmother take care of the settling and everything. So, but other than that, once you get on her, she's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And other one is that back in 1967, that's when I was in Flagstaff working there, and then I came home and then got a job with the tribe, with a tribe in the chapter house, working with the kids, with high school students, and we have a job. So we will go to, we just help families prepare the boys, prepare the men's fence or the corral and things like that. And so we turned around there, and then every now and then I have to go to window lock. I finally learned how to drive at that time by then. And I have to go to window lock to pick up our checks.
Okay.
In Chatham House. And for a while, I really enjoyed it, but then after a while, it just is kind of not feeling. Anyway, one day we went to just right above the gap. There's, you've been on that road, right, the highway now?
Yes.
Highway from the gap to Page?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, there's that first windmill. That's what's known as the first windmill.
Okay.
There used to be a rodeo ground there.
Ah.
My dad's nephews and their families. So we mend the fence there and root the day, and then we left. And somehow my truck, it was a dirt road then. It was only paved up to the second windmill.
Right.
Because it was going to be paved all the way to Page. This is before the dams was being built here. So they went as far as, the highway went as far as the windmill. And somehow my truck, all of a sudden I was like going fast and I tried to freeze. It didn't work. And I have how many kids? About 5 years in the back, and then 3 of them in the front. And I went on the side of the road and we turned over.
Ooh.
And so that was another accident. That was with a vehicle.
How were the people in the back? Did they do okay?
It's apparently it did not. It may have been slowing down, and when we went off the road, it was an uneven. You know, there was kind of like small ditch on the side.
Mm-hmm.
We went through on the side, and on my side, I landed on the driver's side, so I was in. But the other boys got out, the one that's in the back, and then my sister was with us too, so my younger sister. And she and the other passengers got out the other side, but I couldn't get out because the steering column was just right next to my face. So I have, the windows at that time were thick, not like the windows that we have in vehicles today. The window broke and cut up my face. I tell people, they ask about, why do you have scars on your face and my forehead? And they say, it's not aging. This is not my wrinkle. This is my scars. And the funny thing is that this was... my younger brother was going to college in California, but he was going into the service. And when he was younger, few years before, he got kicked by a horse along his left chin, cheek bone, that's where the horse kicked him, and kind of like has a big scar right in there. Well, this was the summer that he got, was going to Vietnam, so he went to the hospital and they took out his face. They did the plastic surgery and removed.
Oh wow!
So he no longer has that.
Cool.
He'd be like, just like, you know, like a hoopable horse. Horse's hoop. I asked about him, and no, I was not going into the military, so they couldn't help me with my scars. So,
nice.
Happened today. So I totaled that vehicle and up in the hospital, and then I was probably unconscious for about at least 2.5 days.
Wow.
But my face was so swollen I couldn't see. I mean, I could barely see, and I could hear I could hear people talking coming in to visit me. And then there was a lady in there. She massaged me and gave me a rub down and did everything for me. as a patient.
Nice.
And then to find out later that he is my husband's aunt. My husband's uncle was married to her. But Rosie was so nice.
Nice.
She said, okay, time to roll over now. Let me rub your back. And she was really nice, and I really liked her.
Nice.
And I would become a member of her family. married her husband's nephew, which is kind of funny. So I told her about it one day. She said, yeah, I did a lot of things, but she couldn't really remember me. So that took me longer. That accident took me longer because I have a nerve pitch on my spine, so that kind of paralyzed me. Paralyzed me on my right side, my arm and my legs.
Okay.
So I was hobbling around for a while, and at that time, they didn't take, Flagstaff did not do some serious treatment in Navajo, so they have to fly me to Albuquerque in New Mexico
for the treatment
and everything, just about every 2 weeks. And that was also, that winter, I was getting better. I could still get around. But my therapist, because I can move my right hand, I'm a right-hand person, couldn't brush my teeth. So she made this, kind of like a glove type for me so I could put my comb and my toothbrush in that so I could move my hand. And I have to play with my hand, with my right arm up all the time. So we live in a home ground, in a round home ground. So the doctor came, my therapist came, and they put a hook in the lock, and so I could pull my arm. So I couldn't really train at night because my arm has to be up all the time.
Okay.
Even at night. But anyway, eventually I got better, and stayed with a friend and some friends in Flagstaff, but I still went to Albuquerque for treatment.
Okay.
And that was the year, and by November, I was okay. I could walk a little bit. I could walk more. So before Thanksgiving, I decided I wanted to go home. My friends couldn't take me home because the missionaries that used to be up at Coppermine.
Okay.
So they came home back to Georgia to visit their family. So I took the bus from Flagstaff and got up right up there just above the cut. And there's one of the first road that turns to the right. And that usually goes to go home. It's no more than, what, about maybe 3-4 miles. So I got up. Got out of the bus and started walking on the road, and I fell in the snow.
Ooh.
I got in the snow, and it was above my knees. I said, no, I won't be able to do this. No one has used that road yet. And so I said, no, I'll just stay on the highway. So I walked on the highway and up to, it says 530, mile 530. There's a road that again goes to the right, to the south, so I turned on that, and that was me, so I walked on that. By then I was getting tired, and eventually one of my father's sister, my aunt, husband was coming down, and somebody stopped by, and it was Jesse. He says, what on earth are you doing here? And I said, I'm going home. And then he said, okay, the snow is pretty deep and it's very slippery, so you can get in. So he couldn't take me home because I went to where my mother and my sister, who were not, it's not paid. The snow was too big. And so I got in and he delivered me up to a place that it's known as a something, our Porcupine Mesa neighbors lived in. And that was my mother's uncle on her father's side. So he was my grandfather. Anyway, so he dropped me off there because he was blind. So I got there and spent the night there. And then the next day, the family, my grandfather's family, they had a vehicle. They took me to another neighbor's. We lived maybe about 2.5 miles from where we lived, but there's a ridge between us, where they live and where my mother lives. So I got there, and they were cooking breakfast. So we ate breakfast. So I haven't had breakfast really eaten for, about 2 days?
Wow.
And really, I mean, just big meal. And everything was so good. The white bread and the tortilla type like bread. And then there was meat. Well, everything was so good. So one of my dad's niece told me, says, have you ever eaten a horse?
No.
And I looked at him and I said, no.
Okay.
But it was good. I mean, I ate it. I didn't taste the difference between it.
Nice.
I like meat and stuff like that. I might have thought it was, just goat meat or what? Because goat meat and mutton and the sheep usually taste a little slightly different.
Uh-huh.
But not much. But anyway, so I just said, thank you. I said, it has. So I was going, I knew the horses. And I said, I was wondering which of the horses they killed.
Mm.
And then they loaned me a horse. And so I started going home on that horse. And that, the snow was up to the horse's belly.
Whoa.
We walked very slowly. And apparently my sister and mom saw me. Somebody coming over, and they were thinking, oh, who's coming down the road, from the ridge. So they watched me, and I just let her go, and just as slow as we can get. It took us a while to get home.
Hmm.
And they told me just to let her go once I got home. So I unsettled and let her go, and she started for home.
Oh.
So that was a big snow. And I was able to get around then. I could still use my arm. And one time we ran out of coffee. So another cousins and everybody's related to clans live south of us, and this is going up a little higher elevation. And that's where I told you about that. So way back in the 1940s.
Yes.
Usually a railroad track or something that would go to probably to the dam or to Page area.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I got on my mom's horse and then I rode out there. My cousin had been going back and forth, and there was a trail there, so we did okay. So I think we ran out of coffee and sugar, and so we couldn't get out, even though my brother had a vehicle, and the snow was just too deep, and he was shoveling snow from our house on the road towards south, towards Coppermine. And he shoveled and shoveled, and he was shoveling. And believe me, he shoveled about maybe a mile and a half.
Wow.
And anyway, I got there. I got I bought the sugar and whatever we were missing. So wherever we ran out, and then I went home. And then I guess I didn't realize that my face got froze because it was frozen. I have a scarf and everything else on my face, and I didn't realize that my face, you know, kind of like sunburn.
Or frostbite.
Frostbite, yeah.
Wow.
And I had that for a while. It was kind of funny. So I couldn't even feel it. I think it was until like a couple of days later, my face felt like it was sunburned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was another one. That wasn't an accident. That was just sort of an adventure. And then it was probably into somewhere at the end, not the end of the summer, but maybe in January. My brother was shoveling, and then he says, "I don't know how far I'm going to shovel, but I'm going to keep trying." So he goes out there, and lo and behold, a tractor comes along.
Oh, wow.
So the Navajo tribe sent tractors to create a road. Open the road, and then my brother said, "They cover up the areas where I have."
Oh no!
That upset me. He was kidding, of course.
Mm.
Okay, then. To be going to the trading post again. So I spent my winter up a big snow that I remember back home. It snowed before. It snowed before Thanksgiving, and it snowed up to past Christmas. So we were all bundled up in our. My brother built a whole town, and it was nice and warm. So.
Alice, how did you keep the sheep and the goats? And your horses, how did you keep them alive during the big snows?
Well, what we did was, what my brother did was that he shoveled the corrals out. And the horses, we just let them, they traveled better in the snow by themselves and find the grass. So we decided not to worry about. And then he went out and got cut down, juniper and pinyon pine tree and whatever shrubs that he could find, and he bundled them up and brought them home. And that's how we didn't have any hay or any feed.
Okay.
So that's how our animals survived. And we had a lot of sheep, and my mother had a lot of sheep then. So, and then the lambing season that started. So it was like we barely slept for 22 hours.
Wow.
So we had chicken on the sheep make sure that the newborns are okay. We brought them in, cleaned them off, and then let them stay and give them to their mom the next day, the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
But we made it. Yeah. It was really weird because we didn't lose hardly any lambs to the cold. I would go out there, and then my sister would go out there, and my mom would go out there, and then my brother would go out there. And sometimes when I go up, and if there is an ewe that's ready to give birth, I would just lay between two sheep, nice and warm, take a nap until the lamb was born, and then let the mother get used to the litter off and things like that, know that it's her baby, and then I take it back to the whole town.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was really good. Yeah.
Alice, there has been a slow change over the years from sheep to cattle.
Well, we didn't have any cattle then, our neighbors did. But usually in the summertime, there are some activities going on, like the enemy dance, which the white people call, well, even some of them call them the school dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually performed for warriors.
Okay.
And for the returning warriors, it's more the enemy revenge or activity. Usually there's an exchange of different gifts to my sister, my older sister, and my mom, who do that to help out and things like that. And they were given, I guess, maybe two or three calves.
Okay.
And a female and the male. And that's where they started. Our family started the cattle. Excuse me. We still have sheep, but only maybe beginning with about seven, probably at the end of the year, with about seven cows. And after that, I went back with like Stephen and down to Phoenix to work. So I didn't really get to see that. In 1998, that's when I met Mel. So then after that, I didn't go through school. I mean, I didn't stay at home after that. So that was our ranching. And then my mother came to reduce the sheep. Well, we didn't. We probably have to move 500 sheep.
Hmm.
And that's a lot of sheep.
That's a lot of sheep.
Yeah, that's a lot of sheep. So, and then we would talk about, well, there's always talk about overgrazing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to me like with that many sheep, we have water. Like where we live, there's about 23 springs. And that is where we water the sheep. And then my mother got older, and she was the one that really, really took care of sheep. As she got older, she began to do less. So I guess my sisters decided they can reduce the food. The name of the cattle.
Okay.
And then the horses that I took care of when I left, my brother got married, so he was with his family, and nobody could really take care of the horses anymore. So I don't know how many horses we have. It's something like maybe around about 12.
Okay.
And we used to go after them if there's enough water where they can get water, I usually don't go after them daily, maybe, but every 2 weeks, even my brother. So I've seen the horses over there horses over there, so we really might check in that direction. So I took care of the horses until I left, and then after that, I guess my sister, we took turns taking care of them and the food. My two older sisters. My older sister that got unhitched the wagon, and she passed away. So it was just my other two sisters, and one of them was in school. So there was only one older sister home. So again, it was just my mom and her, and my brother would come out and them to help out. So, and within about 2 years, nobody could go after the horses. So eventually, we people usually just take horses at that time. So we only have the root horses after that. It was about three of the root horses that they took care of, and the other eventually disappeared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alice, I wanted to ask you, actually, my wife Hazel was curious about your thoughts on Paige, and there was no town there when you were born, and it appeared out of nowhere for the dam, and then the dam was built, and the highway, and then the power plant was built, and then the power plant went away, and the tourists came and came and came, and do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, the thing was that, the idea was that the Navajos would have, a pretty good advantage of having a local town. It's going to be developed, and there's going to be a lot of privilege available by way of water and jobs and school.
Okay.
And some of these did come true, like the school. Which is a school and a place to go shopping, more variety of food than at the trading post. So that was one of the advantage. And my thought about it is that I didn't come back until after I got married, back in 1973, when we moved to Page. Because of my husband, but he applied for, just out of examen, he applied for an Abuja reading station. But my husband is a merchandiser. He had been in Flagstaff, and so he liked that because he's pretty much his own boss.
Okay.
Travel and service stores in other areas. So he went and applied. He went to training, but he didn't like it. He said, it's just, you're just in a building, in a classroom all day. He just didn't like it at all. He's an outdoor person. So he trained there for through the summer, and then he came back and told me, so I decided I'll just let him do what he wants to do. He said, I'd rather be traveling, I'd rather be doing something else than... He was trained to be a train operator.
Okay.
Yeah, and he passed a test and everything else, but then he resigned from there and went back to merchandising. And that's why we moved to Page, because he worked with Babbage and Flagstaff, and then... When he inquired about his job, they told him there was an opening in Page. And to me, of course, that was, all exciting, moving closer to home. And we moved up to across the lake at Green Haven. We have a little trailer.
Okay.
One of the Airstream.
Okay.
We put our airplane home. My son was also, didn't have a chance to go to school locally, and all of this. That was our advantage. And it really did not, and plus I was also looking for a job. The first year, the first summer that we were here, that's when I went and applied and inquired about job with the Park Service, and I was hired as a seasonal for a couple of months. And I liked it. So that was the advantage part. The negative part did not really came about. Well, from after my husband got transferred here, he transferred at the Chinle. So we lived there for about 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he got transferred back to Page. And but I was still a seasonal, so I had to go back and forth on my days off. I come to Page from Chinle. I try to get a job at Chinle, but you have to know somebody in the office in order to get a job. And I think there's a way there sometimes. So I couldn't get a job. The job there, as much as I like to work at, you like to have work at, going into I went to other places, but they have received me coming back. But there were times that I was an Avon lady. I was an Avon lady before that in Flagstaff. So I went back to that for a while. So he was fun. And I guess the negative part was that the government disagreement about the water, about the waters between the government and the Navajo.
Okay.
So that was, back when they first started, I remember going to a couple of meetings, all the things that be available. There would be a water pipe from out of Lake Powell to Coppermine into the gap and all the way up to Conlon. That, of course, it never happened. And right now, of course, the government won their case on the water usage.
Huh.
The people in all these areas that agreed to and have provided their support for the filling the dam and all of that. With it all gone now, and we did not come through. So it is still a big issue.
Hmm.
A really big issue. And so that is the negative part of it. And then the part about the school was fine because they're sending up to school here from first grade to finish high school, and then down to USA.
Yeah, to have a school there in Page.
Yeah.
That's really neat, to bring in all the children from the surrounding communities without sending them off to boarding school somewhere is great.
Yeah, and I guess the other positive would be about the filling the Navajo community now.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of work is, and have many houses done, so there's tents and trailers and shitty houses in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was writing, I used to write out there in the canyon, and I found where people have lived, kind of like way back along in a prehistoric time, and the alcoves and things like that.
Okay.
Kind of funny to see that, and that's where people live and work at the plant.
Okay.
Most of them work at the plant, as far as I know. And then the government put in one of those new trailers. Of course, they end up at the Grand Canyon. Some of the important employees live in those canyons. In those trailers, you can. Kind of funny to see, and because when I was an Avon lady, I used to visit those things. Field Page, really small, like our airplane home.
Okay.
Trailers. Yeah. And I went to make that transfer some of those trailers to a different village. And Grand Canyon got some, and everybody complained about it. Yeah. And then the dam itself was, I was here when the water was just coming up. And at that time, I never thought about working for the Park Service or, have anything to do with anything. I've been in the canyon up on the lake with some friends. And you have to walk through a lot of these places and see all the beauties, the archers, the natural bridges back in there. I've seen some of those up as far as the junction of San Juan. But anyway, so, and then when I did got the Park Service job, of course, I was got interested in it, and eventually, even as a seasonal, I met and with friends up into the camp, up to late, and which is some of these areas. So that's how come I knew quite a bit, some of the canyons, and between here and Navajo Mountain and up San Juan. So
okay.
It kind of felt familiar with it. So I think, and the water was really, really coming up. It came to Fuji. And then, of course, right now, it's like, okay, we may not have any water here in a few days. And so, hey, I know how to haul water up from wells so we can feed it. My sisters were laughing about me. So that's what we usually do at home, the wells. And the water got too low to pump, then we had to use bucket to pull water out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was that water free to fill up in Page and drive out to the back?
Was the water front, I'm sorry?
Oh, sorry, you mentioned hauling water?
Yeah.
And was that water free to pick up, or was there a cost for that?
No, the water right now is, I was just kidding when I told them that I was going to haul water. I
mean, oh, okay.
Do my own, and we've done it before.
Hmm.
I think water is what is so important. That's what the Navajos call it, the water of the elements of life.
Yes.
Life. Water is life.
Yes.
So there are some areas I'm disappointed. I guess the part that I am kind of concerned about is visitors is really good because it's where the community and business get their money and when it's busy. But other than that, they begin to drive all over.
Hmm.
And then the bike trails and these retailers. I've been back up, and some of these places where I usually really, really enjoy the areas around the lake, the Site Canyon. There are places now on the other side, like the Wind Creek site.
Okay.
Of course, it's more lower and easily accessible to get to the river or to the lake. And I've been back in there with friends way back. And yes, we used to be able to drive to the rim of the canyon where the lake is now. And as a matter of fact, some of the movies that were made, like The Big Story Ever Told, my family were in that. And I didn't get in because I was in Flagstaff too. But we used to be able to get down to the Padre Bay.
Okay.
And go down to the rim of the river there. So, and all that changed. Yeah.
Hmm.
So I think those are some of the kind of like the beautiful places that I've seen that are now worn down and trails back in there.
Huh.
And then later on I did some hiking along from Bang Lane Road up as far as I can go.
Okay.
And then up to, we used to drive up to Kaparowicz.
Mm-hmm.
These were the roads that were put in during the excavation of where the coal was going to be mined. And so when we moved here, these roads were still in pretty good condition. And we, of course, my husband went on a week, when he's off, on weekends, he would pack everything, it's ready for cooking, skillet, frying pan. He was a meat and potato man, sort of steaks and potatoes and whatever else,
mm-hmm.
and camp out there. And so, those places, at the beginning of the trails, where you're able to get to the river.
Okay.
Into the canyon. We were really badly used. As a matter of fact, the government wanted to get land exchange.
Okay.
For the Page area, since this is a former reservation. apart, and they said that we, as a Navajoist, would get the land on the other side, on the Warm Creek site. After I've been out there, it says, no way, let's just get that and then put you to me in a mud hole. So I kind of protest that, and I said, you haven't, if you haven't been out there, you don't know what it's like. I don't know. I said this at one of the chapter meetings where they were talking about the land exchange at that time.
Okay.
So I, of course, the exchange was way up in Anna area, which is also rich in uranium and oil. So we didn't get that land in there. I don't know. I don't think that I would have moved into areas like Moon Creek. Maybe on top, but there was not. On top of Pagulich, maybe there, but other than that, not below. But anyway, so those are the things that I have disagreed. And even up in Korea area, when we used to be back in there was hardly any, but now it's a lot of visitors back in there. And of course, I guess as time goes on, you can't keep people from enjoying the beauty. Yes, it is. And I enjoy it. I don't have any really favorite places. People ask, what's your favorite place, or your favorite part in the canyon, your favorite trail? I don't have any. Each time I go out somewhere new, I say, wow, this is beautiful. I like to go back. Some places I've been back, and some places I have not.
It seems like it's all beautiful.
It is all beautiful. I mean, I just, like, we've been to the southern Utah National Parks and Monuments, and did some not long hikes, but short hikes. A day hike, anyway, in the area. Now I notice that I've seen that people go back in there, so it's a lot of traffic now.
Yeah.
Which is as well, like this, I'm more we enjoy nature, hopefully, but in the future that there will be some section of it that will not be overused.
Right, right. You gotta protect from overuse, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I am glad that the native people are getting some of the areas become a national monument, and of course the people who are either using the land as ranchers or because of the minerals that may be available in there, or they're against that. But I am all for preserving. Having an agency that will protect these areas.
Yes.
For the future generations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking, Alice, maybe this is a good place to wrap this up. What do you think?
Okay, that would be fine.
Okay, well, this will then conclude part 5 of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Alice Talakte. Today is Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Alice, thank you so very, very much.
Okay. You're welcome, Tom, and I enjoy talking with you, too, and trying to remember some of these areas.
Me, you too. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.